What it did was take their most lucrative, passionate, movie-going people that were buying hundreds of DVDs and Blu-rays, and now they could get them all for $7.99.
The New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner. Greetings and welcome along to the New Zealand Business Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spain, founder and chief executive at Guerrilla Technology. Now, I really love seeing leaders and organizations succeed, really doing the best that they can do. That's why we launched the New Zealand Business Podcast as a tool to help you in your everyday business, learning new tips and things from others who have been successful. Now, this also crosses over with what my firm, Guerrilla, exists for. We're here to help organizations be successful through the smart use of technology. And, of course, podcasting is just another medium that technology has created. Well, this episode, it's my distinct privilege to welcome along Darren Linton. Now, Darren is the chief executive of Yellow, and he's going to share about his life and business and varying perspectives on disruption and transformation, and of course, why he's excited to be at the helm of Yellow.
Welcome along, Darren.
Hi, good to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the time out to come and chat today. As usually like to do, is get a little bit of the background story about how you got to this place that you're at now in terms of that chief executive role, but going sort of back to the beginning in terms of where you grew up and your education and so on.
Okay, so born in a little place, Levin, between Palmerston and Wellington, parents from Palmerston North, and grew up there, had a great time for the first 11 years, and then we moved up with my father's work. He was with Fletcher Challenge, or the little hardware store he was running, was bought out, and we moved up and lived on the shore. So we grew up in Rossay Bay, went to Rangitoto College, and then I went on to Auckland University, and from there on to work.
So as you were growing up, what things came through for you in terms of your interest in leadership and business and so on?
Yeah, I guess my business appetite was whetted through my father, actually. So I've got one younger brother, and so we grew up together, had a fantastic background and family life. And Dad was doing some things that were really interesting. I didn't understand what these concepts were in marketing and product development or advertising, but we sat around the dinner table and we just listened and talked about it. And I became really fascinated with, I guess, what is marketing and how people become interested in a product and why they become interested in how advertising works. And my father actually was running three little hardware stores that got bought by Placemakers, and they came down and looked at what he was doing, and he had an artist that was a very good friend, and he would put promotions together, and the his friend would draw all these tools and things, and they were putting direct mail into letterboxes, and it was really early. In fact, we think it may have been the first direct mail in the hardware sector back a long time in the 70s, and they liked that and the promotions, and we came to Auckland and he became the marketing director of Placemakers. And I just remember having lots of dinner conversations around business and just opening my eyes up to why we went to a cafe or why you went to a service station, and some people, the days where they filled your car up and they gave you service, and why you'd go back to that one and not to another one. And I became fascinated by all of those things. And I guess the way Dad talked about it, it felt like, and I've been privileged to work my way through marketing, where marketing's been a core part of the business. So if you're in that marketing department and you've got some commercial responsibility, and you feel like you're in the heart of the business, which is really good fun, and we'll get onto it, I'm sure, but that was certainly the way through the entertainment world, to be part of the marketing team in that industry was really great.
Yeah, good stuff. And so when it came time to study,
yep,
what did you do? Or is that a pretty obvious answer?
Yeah, well, it was, I guess. So I went through school and managed to just scrape my, I think you were on a point system at those days, and I can't remember, I think I got 294 points or whatever it was, and it was about four more than you needed to scrape into Auckland University and do a bachelor's degree. So I went into there. That was always the idea, to go and do a commerce degree by the time I'd kind of gone through school. And then Actually, I hadn't decided by that time about marketing. I just started with a broad base of subjects and accounting and all the rest of it. But I did, I found things that I gravitated towards was people and psychology. So I did almost half a psychology degree and marketing, and I felt they went really well together. And I was just fascinated by how, again, people's brains work and what we get attracted to, why we do what we do, why do we pay more for a brand because it's got a label on that, you know, and what that means to all of us and how we, you know, you can't help it, but you get attracted to, you know, marketing and brands and products and advertising. So that was where I went, and I spent 4 years at Auckland University, and from there I got into my first job.
So what did you get into? What did it look like to start with for you, your career?
So some interesting advice actually for me, and I've heard this on a couple of other podcasts and with one of your guests as well, where think less about the job and the money and much more about the opportunity and the organization and what you're going to learn. Mm-hmm. And somebody else said to me, the best thing you could do as a marketing graduate is go into sales. So I took that advice, and I feel like I got the best of both worlds. And I think this happens a lot. You appreciate and recognize what you got when you look back on it. And so I joined Johnson & Johnson, which was this amazing FMCG, multinational, you know, huge business, but also very powerhouse in marketing. But I got, and I started as a merchandiser. I went in and I was literally stacking shelves. What was attractive to me about that was I got a company car and a mobile phone. So if you remember back in those days, you got one of those bricks that you kind of carried around in your car. But that was exciting. I was in an organization that I knew was big and you were going to learn from. I got into a graduate program and I spent 9 months on the ground, you know, and it's, I'm going to talk about humility a little bit as well. And you certainly then learned from the ground up what it was like to stack shelves and just be part of that. And I reported to a sales rep. And after 9 months, I got the opportunity to take on a sales role and have my own territory and my own car and a merchandise. That was a really exciting step for me. At the same time, because you're in one of these huge organizations, they gave you a lot of training and you got exposed to lots of things, and you could go and sit in other departments for a week and all that, which was just fantastic. I was hoping it would be good at the time. And as I look back, I feel very lucky. The other thing I felt was brilliant about being in New Zealand at that time was you were a small percentage point in this huge organization's revenue. So you kind of got left alone a lot too. So you got the benefits, I thought, of being in a big organization, but you also got the freedom to do a lot of things that you wouldn't have got to do if you had joined Johnson & Johnson in the US, for instance. So I think that's a real benefit of being somebody growing up and starting their career in New Zealand. I'm sure it's the same today. I've been away for a long time, but we'll get to that. I think you get to be a bit of a jack of all trades, which is quite a good thing early on in your career, where you get to try and do a lot of things and you're not under the microscope and push down a very narrow avenue too early.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting, because it does seem to be, it's a hallmark of Kiwis that end up going and working elsewhere in the world, that we've got a broader sort of set of skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess to a degree, I've tended to assume that that is very much a reflection of the fact that most of us are in smaller businesses and so on, but you were part of a really big business.
Yep.
But you still got to learn, you know, a really broad set of skills by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and I think what you find is in a smaller country and in a smaller business, even being part of this huge multinational, there's not as many people. So you have to do more for yourself. You need to be more self-reliant. You don't have this huge research department and a huge department in finance or a huge department anywhere. You're actually quite small, close-knit teams that have to learn and rely on how to work together and how to use outside resources as well. So I think you learn very quickly how to juggle many other people and resources around you. And I think there's also a Kiwi, in fact, I believe it goes back right to how we've been brought up. We tend to, in New Zealand, play 10 sports. We have all sorts of things going on, and I've been back 2 years and our children are now enjoying the same sort of attitude. It's very relaxed. It's very open. I think the space that we live in is obviously very open. The fact that, you know, we had an experience with our youngest, first day of school a year ago, and my wife went to pick him up. And he had come from a school in the UK. It was a private school. It was gated. You couldn't get in after 9 o'clock without knowing the code. All the teachers, or they would know exactly where your child is at every moment. And there's something good about that too. But here, it was an opposite experience of there's no gates. People can walk through the school during the day. It's safe, you know, and long may it be that way. And my wife turned up at the gates at 3 o'clock and couldn't find Ollie, and found him, and found first the caretaker, and he said, well, I saw a group of boys go up the road. He went up the road, and here's this group of boys, day one, up a tree, no shoes on, and that's exactly why we came back to New Zealand, right? And it was fantastic. And I think there's that kind of environment that just allows boys and girls to explore and have quite a different experience growing up.
Mm, that's good. Now, you mentioned the training that you got there, you know, right at the start of your career, and it sounds like that was really valuable. How different was that level of training, or the type of training, to, I guess, what you see as sort of the norm within, you know, workplaces today? Because obviously we've gone through a lot of changes. There's, you know, I think probably more responsibility on individuals to upskill and to be training, you know, outside of their work environments as well. Yeah, consuming, yeah, you know, content like this in terms of podcasts and so on, that sort of, you know, lifelong approach to learning. But have you noticed changes to training over your career, yeah, in terms of how businesses have adjusted?
I think it's changed in so many ways. I mean, the digital, yeah, the disruption in our lives as consumers, whether it be the incredible phone that you walk around and with, or just in every way, how you can consume content. And I know that from the Universal experience as well, where things are so accessible now. And we've talked a little bit earlier about how you can turn in that dead time in your life, whether it be in the car or in a gym or washing the car or walking around, whatever it is, into your own personal university, and you can learn anything. So I think that's also changed in the corporate world, where now how you can deliver, whether you're on the corporate side and you're trying to deliver it into your workforce and into your people, the tools that you have and the channels that you can use now are just so incredible through all of the digital technology. And then if you're then on the other side of that, there's always room for classroom training and interaction with people and learning and sharing ideas and all those sorts of things. But there's so much that as an individual now, I think you can learn yourself. And I always talk about this, and we'll get to this as well, but curiosity is such an important part of anybody's development. And if you haven't got it yourself, you know, the corporate or anybody, they can't teach you that. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, you got to be curious yourself. And if you are, you're in a wonderful time, because you can learn anything you like from any leader around the world. I mean, it blows my mind that the world's leaders are now doing podcasts and sharing all of what they've learned. So it's very easy, I think, now to train yourself. But in a corporate sense, I think that has changed. And the smart ones, and just going back to my training, The thing I always think about is you learn so much, you know, through this formal training, but what I learned was all the informal things. It was just being around people, watching them, watching great leaders, watching the bad ones, saying, I don't want to do it like that.
That's the best lessons you learn, right?
Often, right? You know, you think, God, if I ever get the opportunity to have a role like that, I'm not going to do it that way. And the other side, and you remember those for much longer, right? We always remember those pains and the hard times. But often, I think, when you come back to that first 7 years of my career with Johnson & Johnson, I got the opportunity to do lots of different things and just witness people operating in business and contracts and negotiation and dealing with foodstuffs or you know, suppliers coming in, just soaking up everything and all the different departments and how it worked.
Mm. So what year was it that you joined Johnson & Johnson?
Oh, now we're going back. So I left, it was 92 that I would have started my career with Johnson & Johnson. Yeah. And in 98, so it was about 6 to 7 years, I left these shores to go on my OE, packed my backpack and headed off to Asia. And I thought I was going to be away for 2 to 3 years, as you do. And I came back 18 years later, and that was just a couple of years ago.
So fill us in on that time overseas. As some pretty interesting experiences.
It was.
that kept you occupied and interested in life away from New Zealand.
Yeah, and I think it still happens today, and it was certainly a big part of my friendship group, this idea of going overseas and seeing the big wide world. My eyes got open to it first through Johnson & Johnson. Again, they gave me the opportunity to go to Singapore and work there for a year. So I'd done the sales thing. I'd gone into the office and set up trade marketing, worked in Spaceman and Shells, how you organize all the products and maximize the profitability and all those sorts of things. And then they said, look, there's an opportunity for you to go and set that up in Asia. And at the time, I was only 24 years old. And I went up there, and boy, I learned some lessons when you talk about failure and how not to do some things. I was probably, on reflection, too young, but I grabbed it with both hands and I made the most of it. But what I came away with it was this opening of my eyes to another whole part of the world and Asia, and the amounts of people and how business is done completely differently, and how you thought you were going to approach your meetings with your direct reports, and I was going to be this good manager, and you know, I had people that were and just come from a completely different background, different culture, twice my age, had so much to learn about how to do that. But had an amazing time and an amazing experience. And we set up some things up there and introduced some technology and travelled around a bit. But that really whetted my appetite to then see more of the world. I actually came back to New Zealand and worked in brand marketing for a few years before I headed off. So that was why I then, curiosity opened my mind. I went back to Singapore, started there, and I travelled all through Asia for 3 months, which was just incredible. I would encourage anybody. And I did it not straight after university. I did it after working. And for me, that was brilliant, because I thought, well, I was 28 by then. I'd seen a little bit. I'd learned to, you know, seen the world a bit. And I had an amazing experience for 3 to 4 months traveling there, and then landed in London. And like lots of Kiwis, my grandparents are from the UK, landed on my cousin's sofa in Pimlico in the middle of London, which was great, and spent then reality of 7 weeks knocking on doors, seeing if I could get a job. So I thought, little old Kiwi, can you actually turn up in this big London place? And what I found was I'd get really close to getting an opportunity in a job, and then I'd just lose out because there'd be somebody that had been there, or they were local and they knew the market a bit better. And what changed for me, and I think this is where you get breaks along in your life, and I got a break by an Australian lady who had been in the same sort of place 5 or 6 years before. She was now a marketing manager at Disney, and this was my break into the entertainment world. Wasn't thinking that was where I was going to go. I tried all the FMCG routes, although it was a little FMCG because it was home entertainment, and she gave me a chance. And I went back probably a couple of rungs and became a product manager for the Wiggles, of all product. If you remember the Wiggles, from Australian group, and I think when you landed in there, you're a Kiwi, you're Australian, the Wiggles, it's all the same. You'll do. you can launch them into the UK. So I had the responsibility of preschool for Disney and launching the Wiggles into the UK, which were a huge hit. And
what an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, it was great fun. And it was good fun. We had I'd met my wife through Disney. She was in sales. And then actually I left Disney after about a year. I did a contract, covered a maternity. So I think that's the other thing you need to be a bit more flexible about when you go and do something different like that. I took less money. I took a contract job. I needed to get started. And actually, again, I felt I landed on my feet with Disney. What a great business.
And that can be hard, can't it? Go into a new country, because I'm sure you've probably been in a similar position of needing to hire people and you know, I think sometimes when you're looking at employing somebody who's maybe new in a particular location,
yep,
yeah, there can be a little bit of caution because, well, this person just wants something and they'll take anything to get started here.
Yep.
Do they really understand the cultural differences of this location as opposed to where, you know, where they've come from? And, you know, obviously in your case, yeah, you had somebody that actually understood what it was like to be on the other side, and that helped you get started.
Yeah, and you need that, right? And I think it's something that we need to think about in New Zealand. Yes, absolutely. She gave me a chance, and we talked earlier, you know, I really passionately believe you should now recruit for curiosity. Look at people that are curious, that have got open minds, that want to solve problems. Then, really importantly, perseverance. You know, it doesn't matter where it is in their life. What have they overcome, whether it be sport or music or just a tough time? People that can persevere through something. And then for me, I also believe humility is a really big part of it. And Kiwis are a fairly humble kind of race, I guess, or a culture anyway. But I think particularly in today's world, we're moving well past that idea of command and control from the leader down, where yes, it was all about output and all about the Industrial Revolution. It was like, oh, if you want to double production, double the people, put them in the factories. Now I think where we're heading is the key IP that a human's going to have is creativity and ideas, you know, through robotics and AI and all this. You know that any of the manual sort of work and things that can be done and automated will be done by machines. So we need to have organizations filled with people that are curious and they can persevere and humble to work with other people. We don't all know it and always think that 30 people in a room, you're always going to come up with better ideas if everybody can share. But we need to give people a chance. And I've come back from overseas, and my process and journey to come back was quite tough as well. And a lot of people make the mistake of coming back, and I did this too. So I'll fill in the gaps in a minute. But so I ended up heading up international marketing for Universal Pictures. We were $1.5 billion of, you know, turnover, US dollars. And I'd come back to the New Zealand market and go, wow, you know, if that was double, that's $3 billion. If, you know, depending on the exchange rate, it's triple. I could even say in my CV, I was part of a $4.5 billion. And I had a $350 million marketing budget, US dollars. Wow, that's almost $1 billion. And the numbers are just ridiculous, you know. And it doesn't matter. That's not what you're actually there to sell. What you're trying to sell is that at the heart of it, you're still running a small team. You're still trying to get things done. The challenge in that role was we had 12 operating companies that covered 22 countries, all different cultures, currencies, people, backgrounds. Really what was interesting, it was fascinating, is how did you coordinate all that and how do you get a movie to release across the whole of the world, and what was its core proposition and how are you going to market it and what materials are you going to make and all of those things, all the business things that come together, the targets, the bringing people together and coordinating it. And there's a much better story to be told around the leadership of that and what you learn. And what are the ideas, and how did you hear somebody in Japan tell you that comedy isn't going to work in this market if you sell it like that, versus somebody in Germany saying they want to do it this way, or France, a different cover. They're the interesting stories. And how could you come back and help a business that might be going through a challenge or needs to corral a whole group of people? And I felt coming back in, you got lots of coffees. Kiwis are great. You could have a coffee with anybody. I felt like I could almost ring the Prime Minister and I'd have a coffee with him or her today. And but getting a job was a different thing, where whether that's people being a little worried about what this person from overseas would do. But for me, to your point, I think now I've worked overseas for a long time, I'm looking for those experiences and those people, because I just know that diversity is going to make us a much better company. It's going to make us a much better country, actually, to have all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess, you know, amongst our listeners, there are always, you know, a bunch that are trying to get from, you know, maybe zero, you know, exporting, or they're, you know, partway on that journey and trying to move along a lot further. Any particular lessons that you can share or stories from those interactions with people in different markets and different cultures? You know, you mentioned and you know, I don't know if there's a particular you know, film that you worked on marketing that was you know, much harder than some of the others, but yeah, is there something you can share around you know, working across a whole bunch of different markets and some of the challenges of that?
Yeah, sure. Oh, there's a there's lots of stories. I think first of all, when you go into a entertainment type space, there's this healthy, hopefully, and sometimes not so healthy, friction between the creatives worlds and the business world. I actually really love that. And being in the marketing, you sort of got to be on both of that. So there's obviously, you're there to make money, and the studio wants to maximize that revenue streams, and how do we do that with windows and all sorts of different things that we can do. And on the other side of it is you've got this incredible talent and creative engine. That's the production side of it. And how do you marry those things together? When it comes to distributing a film all around the world, it's easy if you could find a common thread through that film. And often the action films are quite simple because, you know, we all like an action film, and, you know, there's a hero and, a you know, there's a the classic kind of storyline to those. Where it gets harder is where your cultural biases come in. Yes. And that typically happens when you start getting into comedies, even romantic comedies, dramas. We all come from different backgrounds. And that gets really interesting. The most, I wonder if you ever could guess what the most profitable film of all time was. This is going back. There's a musical comedy, if you like. I'll give you a hint. And it became the most successful film of all time. It's probably been beaten now, but this is going back maybe 8 or 9 years ago, was Mamma Mia.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And it was incredible. It started off as a little idea, and it became, I think the music cut through was incredible. The story is just that wonderful, heartwarming story. And then the cast, I thought, was brilliant, and they didn't take themselves too seriously either.
Yeah,
and it surprised everybody. We thought it was going to be successful, but in our wildest dreams, it seemed to do well virtually everywhere. But coming back to your question around, you know, working with people all over the world, I always think it comes back to people and relationships, and the difference of having a conversation over the phone or an email conversation is terrible because it just gets misread very easily. You actually need to go and visit. You need to go and see people. And it's even different. You know, we did conferences and brought people together, and that's one way of connecting and sharing ideas. It's great. But actually, if you're in that head office or you're trying to take a product or a service overseas, you need to go and see your customers. You need to go and see those stakeholders. You need to meet with them in their place and go and eat in their restaurant and drink their sake or whatever it is,
yeah,
and talk to them about their families and about who they are, and share something about yourself. And I found that, again, it comes back to that humility piece. If you are prepared to share a little bit and they can open up too, you start to then trust each other. And I think that's a really powerful thing that Kiwis do naturally. You know, we bring people into this country and we host them, whether it be through rugby or just, you know, pick them up on the side of the road, and we're known for it. It's fantastic. I think that's a great thing to take overseas, and we've got a fantastic brand that we can export. I think we can be a little bit more ruthless, I think, in our business and our goals and how we do that. But it's a great door opener, and we're a well-liked people when you're overseas. I always enjoyed watching Kiwis land in London, and you could spot them a mile away when they so-called just got off the boat, and they'd be on the tube station with their backpack and their flag. And the first thing I'd do is say g'day to somebody, and everybody would look at them like, who's this nutter who's just got on the tube?
Talk to people.
And everybody puts the papers up and everybody looks at their shoes because there's a Kiwi who's just got on, excited to be here and wants to meet some people and turns up and says, "G'day, mate." And I'm proud of that. I always loved watching that happen over London.
Yeah, yeah. That's really cool. And I guess that there's a bit of a pressure or, you know, or a challenge depending on what stage of life people are in with that, going out and connecting and meeting with people, because there's a challenge with, I guess, balancing that travel and spending time with people in those places, part of which is just you've only got so much so much time available to do these sorts of things, but part of it also is sort of the impact that can have on family. Was that something that you had to weigh up and have a bit of a balance with? Where was your family at when you felt it was necessary to or it was a key part of your role to be getting out and visiting people in different parts of the world?
No, absolutely. There's sacrifice in all of this, right? And there's compromise. So I also don't sit here and say it all comes easy or you don't compromise some things. As part of the reason why we're here in New Zealand now, I travelled a lot and we moved the family to Bristol, which is the west of the UK towards Cardiff and Wales. It's where my wife is from. And look, I could only do what I did with my wife's support, and so she sacrificed her career. It was a choice that we made together, and so she brought up the kids, and I was away a lot. And so yes, you need to build those relationships. I think once you build a relationship, then it's easier to do some of the other things, right? Whether it be the phone calls and the emails and the conferences, but you've got to invest some time up front to that. But yeah, it was tough, and we're enjoying being back. We've got two boys, 12 and 17. They came back when they were 11 and 16. So been a challenge and an opportunity, but a challenge for the family to settle into New Zealand. They're British, so my wife is British. I've brought them back to New Zealand. They've always had a very strong connection to New Zealand and the All Blacks, and always supported the sports. And we've been fortunate to come back over those 18 years. We've come back a number of times and enjoyed a lot of what New Zealand's got to offer. But as a tourist, it's a little bit of a honeymoon when you come back like that and spend a month back over Christmas or whenever it is. But we're really enjoying it. It's just the simple things for me. I have breakfast with the family now before I go to work. This morning, we all leave at about the same time. I go to work, they go to school, and I'll be back for dinner tonight. So that's been a huge shift for us as a family, and I'm loving it. I hope they love it as well, having me around quite a lot more. But it's been great, and for me just to be able to go to football practices. One of the things that struck me coming back to New Zealand, actually, and we'll get to this part where I'm at now with Yellow, and having this team that I inherited, and there was about 30 of them when I started, and all the men seem to all be football coaches. They all seem to run Johnny's football team, and they'd leave at like 5 o'clock or 5:30 on the night that they had to get. And I'm like, who do I need to fire? Where have they gone? Why are you all, all left? Very different to London and some of the organisations. Now, that's not to say people don't work hard here and do long hours as well, but it's a different balance, and it's a wonderful balance if you can get that right. And I think that's so important, right? You've got to balance that family. Sometimes you've got to put the hard yards in and you'd sacrifice it because you're doing something and you're trying to get somewhere. But at the same time, really important to have that quality time with your family and make sure they see Dad.
Yeah. I think that's important for all of us to make sure we keep that balance right. And it will, as you say, it varies, and some people will say, well, balance maybe isn't the right word to describe it, but because it'll probably be off kilter in one direction or another at varying times.
Yeah. But somebody said something to me that I've always tried to live a little bit more by is, I think often we talk, or our attitude is, work's not the enemy, but it works the hard thing, works the stressful thing, works the thing I kind of Sunday night, oh, I've got to go to work. And weekends and families, all the fun bit. And I think if you can try and merge those two ideas together, where actually work you should enjoy work. You should enjoy the people you're with. You should enjoy the challenge. And, you know, I've taken my kids into work. So work and life, if you can intermingle those two things and have a similar attitude, of course they're a little bit different, but if you can have a similar attitude, you know, I've tried to move away from this Sunday night, I can't sleep, I've got to get up at 5 a.m, to get the train to from Bristol to London and start work, and go, I can't wait to get home at the weekend. Then that's not the right way to think, and that's not the right way to live either. You want to have a better, when I say balance, of your attitude between work and life, and try and mix them. And I think we do that better here because people do, and we've brought in flexible hours into Yellow for exactly that reason, to say, listen, if you are a coach or you want to start late or whatever it is, do that. We want you to do that because if you're a happy employee, you're going to be more productive. We're going to be a better place to work, and we're going to do more, and we're going to be more productive as an organization. So I've been very keen to champion kind of putting flexible working in, where people can work an hour extra Monday to Thursday and leave from 1 o'clock on Friday, and try and let people enjoy their family lives and beat that Auckland traffic and get away to wherever they want to get to.
That's cool. That's really good. And I think it's important that we have these discussions. I guess it varies from person to person, the position they're in and their journey, and you know how much they can intermingle and how much fun that they have in terms of doing what they're doing. I think some of us are probably more fortunate than others in terms of landing in places that or doing work that is just something that we absolutely love.
Sure.
And not everyone can land in such fortunate positions, and but even that can have its challenges because for me, I've always done work that I've enjoyed. I can't look back to a time that I wasn't doing something that I really loved, but the challenge for that is I can enjoy it too much, and it's looking at my watch and thinking, oh, I really should have been home an hour ago. And so there can be challenges with even with doing what you love
too. And don't get me wrong, there's bad days and good days,
of course there is.
The rest of it.
That's the reality for all of us, isn't it? So were there any other highlights that you wanted to sort of share about that journey before you came back to New Zealand and we talk a bit more around Yellow?
I think the other thing that I've been fortunate to be part of is where an industry, it wasn't just Universal, but the whole industry growing incredibly quickly. So when I joined Universal, we were turning over about $200 million a year. This is internationally, so the international distribution. And 5 years later, it was $1.5 billion. And we'd built out operating companies all over the world. And I also was fortunate to be in that industry when it went from analog physical, so you can remember it started with cassette tapes, and that was going to kill the movie theaters because everybody's going to watch movies at home now. And we didn't. We rental stores exploded and all of those things. But guess what? The cinemas just got better and they changed their product and service, and people still wanted that environment and coming together as a group. There's something really special. It still is today. It's an event to go to. And then you had DVDs come along, and that was an incredible explosion. Everybody went out and bought, the 100 favorite movies they had over the last 50 years. And of course, the studios made a lot of money selling all of the catalog because those movies had already been paid for. And then Blu-ray came along and 3D, all these different technologies, and saw how that worked. And then what was quite incredible, and we're still living this now, is that digital disruption of being able to download and stream content. There was all these, it's going to crash the internet and wouldn't have the bandwidth. I don't know how we've stayed ahead of it, to be honest, but somehow somebody's working very hard to ensure that we can still watch cat videos on YouTube and download these enormous movies and in high definition and stream them and watched Netflix, and everybody, I guess, knows Netflix today, or virtually everybody, and watching them go from what was a physical DVD rental business in the States. So I don't know if everybody understands that they started life where you they had some groundbreaking things, and they were a subscription service, so that was different.
Netflix did some pretty interesting things.
They did some great things, and but there were other businesses around the world. So there was Love Film was the equivalent in the UK. Mm. It started by a couple of, I think, 20-something-year-olds, and they all sold out when they were about 32, and to I think it was HMV, and they had the same sort of concept where you didn't have the rental penalties of, you know, late fees, which were really painful. He's like, oh, I forgot to take it back on Monday, and now I get stung for another day. So this was this mail order system where you could keep 1 to 5 movies out at a time, depending on the subscription you paid. And what a pain point that solved. And you just sent it back in the post when you wanted for free. Fantastic. But Netflix today, I just read last month, had a content budget of $6 billion. So they have gone from a DVD postal service, and a big one at that, but they almost went broke a few times along the way. And just to put that in context, Universal movie slate for a year would be between $1 and $1.5 billion. And these guys are spending $6 billion. And 10 years ago, they almost went broke. So quite an incredible story that we've all benefited from, because I think probably lots of us pay a very small amount of money, which feels like you get this incredible value back. Really tough for the studios, though, because what it did was take their most lucrative, passionate, movie-going people that were buying hundreds of DVDs and Blu-rays, and now they could get them all for $7.99 a month. Mm. So that was a real disruptive technology, but also just a business model. Mm. I think at the end of the day, what you've learned with all of this is that hopefully, and it usually is this way, the consumer or customer wins. So if somebody's got a service and a product that just meets an amazing need, that will win. The business model will fix itself. It will be, you know, the studios are still here today. They've found a way to still monetize movies, to do it in a different way. They might not like the revenue that they get from Netflix compared to how it was, but that's okay. You know, the power of the consumer and what we all enjoy at the end actually has been awesome. Because we can all enjoy that content wherever we are at a very affordable price.
Mm.
So that was an interesting one. And for me, as the head of international marketing, we also then had to grapple with all of those streaming, you know, it was new customers, new supply chains, new technology. So we went from making physical DVDs, you know, those CDs really, and slightly different technology out of factories to... we had to now encode files and figure out how to partner with people to send these files. How do you encrypt them? Piracy is obviously a big part of that world. How do you deal with that? It was incredible, kind of challenging, exciting time, because you had to overcome so many new things. But at the same time, it was really exciting because you knew what you were delivering as a service and a product was just fantastic. You were using it as a consumer. You're watching people on their phones on the tube, watching little clips of things, TV shows. It completely changed and opened up lots of new audiences as well. Mm. So I found that a fascinating time to be part of that industry, and it continues today.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's so many interesting things to talk about in that space, which will fit in quite nicely when I launch the new podcast I'm working on, which is called Disruption Playbook. But I guess you've come from that role now to Yellow, where you started as in the interim. You started in a marketing role, didn't you?
As a CMO.
Yeah. Mm. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So as I probably touched on, knocked on a lot of doors on the way back into New Zealand, and a friend of mine, Craig Donaldson, who's been here, talks about, you know, building your runway. And I think I would, if anybody's listening to this from overseas, you need to take some time. I spent almost 2 years coming back to New Zealand, and it it was a bit mad. It sounds a bit mad. I'd be flying to LA. When I got out of university, I ran a couple of small businesses and do something completely different. And one of them was an agency, and I helped them set up into LA because I had the contacts into Warner Brothers and Universal. So I thought, I'm halfway to New Zealand. I might as well just keep going. So I'd fly down to New Zealand and spend the weekend and maybe a couple of other days just doing coffees with people, as many as I could, and then fly back to London and carry on working. And I did that for a good 18 months. And I think people need to take the time to come and build those networks and use Kia and whatever contacts you can, and look up people. I looked up Craig, who I hadn't seen for 30 years, used to play squash with him, and look up those contacts, and people will have coffees and introduce you to people. It's fantastic. And then long story short, was the Yellow opportunity came up. And to be honest with you, I said no to start with. I had the same experience as everybody has, Yellow Pages. And I'm honest with people about it, and as they come into the team now, and my experience almost 2 years ago now was the conversation with your friends and family is, do you mean Yellow Pages? Are they still going? How do I cancel my book? And why would you want to work there? So that was kind of the barbecue chat. That we're changing, but that's okay. That's where we're at, or that's where we were. And the job at hand, and this is why I kind of got attracted to it once I got my head around it, was it's another transformational challenge of taking this iconic New Zealand brand that people actually know and love but are not sure what the relevance of Yellow is today.
Yeah, it's fair to say that the core role of the Yellow Pages that we used to rely heavily on has been disrupted by Google and by the internet. So, yeah,
Google before Google, right? Yeah. It was people used to name their businesses AAA Plumbers because the AAA got them to the top of their category or section in the Yellow Pages.
That was the early version of search engine optimization.
It definitely was. That's exactly what it was. And it was a real part of the fabric of the local community all over the world, and obviously here in New Zealand, where it connected people. It provided leads to small businesses, and it was that search engine for consumers to go and find a plumber or a hairdresser or whoever it was looking for. So what we're doing today, and why I found it fascinating, was actually could we – and we're a very profitable business still today – could we build a digital business out of this legacy traditional media business? And by the way, I think that traditional media is going to be around for a lot longer than people give it credit for. There will be a role for traditional media for a very long time. But there's no doubt that we need to build a new digital-based sustainable business. So we're doing it in two ways. What would it look like? So Google's great. We all use Google. But Google can only serve up a business if they've got a website, right? And we know that almost 50% of small businesses in New Zealand don't have a website. So you can't find that very small business in New Zealand. So how do they take their steps into the digital world? How can we help them? How can we be that business that we always were? We help small business all over New Zealand. And one of the ways we can do that is giving them a free profile online. So Yellow Online today, in the last 6 months, we've built something like 38,000 profiles for small businesses. We've built 5,000 websites over the last 3 years for small businesses. So what about if we had an app and a website that you knew had every single business in New Zealand on it? That's just that breadth and depth that you can't get anywhere else, and that's where you go. That could be a USP that makes us different. So we're building out that from a consumer point of view. And then from a business point of view, we're all on our own journeys, whether it be personal or as a business, we're on our own journeys, and we're all on a digital journey to a degree. So how do we help small businesses in New Zealand access the very best digital products all over the world? So the concept that we talk about now is we are building New Zealand's largest digital marketing agency for small businesses. And the way we're going to do that is to give small businesses access to the biggest and the best digital marketing service providers from around the globe. So I think this is the other thing, that if you come from overseas, you don't need to look just here. So you do that through Google. We actually are one of Google's biggest premier partners. They just awarded us last month the best Trans-Tasman business or partner of theirs at helping other small businesses grow. But we want to pull it all together. So how do we help small businesses with, whether it's AdWords, if they're at that stage, build them a website, their SEO, create content. We've partnered with 90 Seconds, a local New Zealand business, to make 60-second ads. So we're very passionate about content. You know, it's the power of watching a video of 60 seconds or somewhere around that length of the owner of that small business tell you why their cupcakes are the best cupcakes that you can buy in that place, or they're the best panel beater, or they're the best hairdresser, or just tell the story. And we believe passionately that you can fall in love with every person in every business if you hear their story and why they do it. So for $2,500, we will help small businesses create a little video, really professionally done with 90 seconds, and we'll put $600 into media and get them an audience, because there's no point just making a video if you haven't got an audience, and we'll advise how to do that and what you should do. We'll advise them on social media, how to create some content. So what we want to do is make it affordable and scalable for a small business to take their first steps into the digital world, and do that in a really smart step-by-step way. So we're building a platform to pull all that together, and then pulling the content and the kind of step-by-step guides for people to do it. So it's a pretty big, ambitious goal.
Yeah, it's interesting, because there's certainly a very, you know, close thread there back to the yellow pages of old, in terms of, hey, you want to get business, then you need it to be listed in the yellow pages, because that was really the only, you know, sort of place that people were looking if they weren't getting a personal recommendation or you know, seeing an advertisement somewhere, you know, somewhere else.
Yep.
So, you know, I can see the connection. Yep. But of course, you're not in a monopoly position as you were,
correct,
you know, with the yellow pages. Now you've got to compete against everybody else, correct, and you've got to step up and make sure what you're delivering really stands out versus all the other offerings in the market.
Yep.
How is that for you in terms of the challenges that creates? And of course, you're newer to the business, so all of the things of the way that Yellow Pages used to be 10 or 20 years ago, I guess you know that history, but you weren't having to be there through that journey. So you were able to sort of come in and have to deal with the challenges, I suppose, but without having experienced what I guess the boom times were like.
Yeah, and look, we hear the stories, because we've still got people that have been in the business for 20, 27 years, and there were boom times. I mean, Yellow in the heyday had the biggest sales force in New Zealand. It was incredible business, incredibly successful. And you're right, it is a huge challenge. So in the last few months, I've just become the CEO, so that's a different challenge for me as well, and there's a journey to that. And you're absolutely right. Look, we went back to, what is the core purpose of Yellow? You know, you start with that, you know, come back to that idea around, you know, purpose. We talked about purpose trumping strategy and execution trumping planning. And we landed on a core purpose, which I think has been inherent in Yellow for a very long time, is to help every business thrive. So we feel, if we go back to that, how do we help every business thrive? So how do we build this marketing services platform? You're right, there's lots of competition out there. That's our core product. That's what we're going to build, and we're going to do it really smartly and in a digital-first way, and it's going to be scalable, it's going to be affordable. Now, that's a very different capability and type of person and organization that we need to the one that's been running a monopoly Yellow Pages, you know, channel to market. But also liken it to every traditional media business around the world is going through the same challenge at different ends of the spectrum.
Of course.
Of how do you manage that very profitable, traditional, historical media and channel while you build something new? And we're all going through that together. So it, for me, it all then comes back to people, culture. So talk about a lot, you know, you need purpose, and we've just talked about that. You then need people, and you need the right capabilities and the right roles, all those sorts of things. And then you need the culture. And the way I talk about it, and we've touched on the first part, you know, talk about recruit for curiosity, perseverance, and humility. And then talk about manage for capability. And I think what's really interesting in the capability space is we, and I've done this in the past in the corporate roles, where you discount those people that come in and they challenge everything and they're slightly entrepreneurial and they're full of ideas, but they really frustrate you because they come to your one-to-ones and they're not prepared and there's no list and they're all over the place and you think, this isn't working. And actually you need those people in every organization today. You need to put them in the right roles and the right places, and you need to put the right people around them and manage them carefully so that you've got outcomes coming from all those ideas. But it comes back to clear purpose. And then you've got people that are really good at scaling things, taking some of those ideas, and they can commercialize them and scale them and get them going. And then you've got people I'd call economizers, where they're actually much more comfortable. Once something's set up and running, they can actually efficiently and effectively run it. And I think the challenge of business today, as we all go through this disruption, is you need a mixture of all of those talents. And in different areas, you need more of them, of course. If you're in the product development and the new part, you need more of those ideas. But it's the trick of how do you bring all of those together. And then the last bit for me is, we talk a lot about, and we're doing this at Yellow, is we then reward for values. And you need people to work to a set of values. We have a very simple set of values and spend a lot of time almost taking the corporate nature out of Yellow, because we've come from a very big business. We're a medium-sized business now. We're 275 people. And our three values are simply do the right thing, make a difference, and build great relationships. And I've come back to everything you do should be so simple that it doesn't need explaining. Mm. If in the, and I've been there before, where you have all this corporate speak, and as you write it down and you show it to somebody when you're inducting them and you go, what that means is, well, you haven't written it down right. It should be simple enough for people to pick up and read whatever that material and thinking is, and they understand broadly what you're trying to get across. So we've spent a lot of time around the culture and the people and putting them in the right places and then giving them freedom. The other bit that I'm very passionate about, and I've learned this myself, I've come from a, you know, that command and control piece where you feel like I'm the head of this function, so I know more about marketing or finance than anybody else, so I'm going to tell you what we're doing. Today it's almost the reverse. It's finding those people where they understand the purpose and the direction, and you give control back to them to then tell you how they think we should tackle these problems and how to change and pivot. So we do 2-week sprints in the business now. So I have a kind of a rhythm where everybody has a manager catch up every 2 weeks. And we run to 2 weeks. What are we doing in the next 2 weeks? And has it worked? Hasn't it? And then we pivot and we change. And that's the kind of rhythm that we're trying to work to. So really interesting and changing the dynamic and how we work as a business. And that's been challenging. It's easier if you start from fresh. But we've got to also carefully manage and be respectful of this business that we've come from and the revenue and everything that's attached to that model. Mm. So, look, I'm loving the challenge. It's been really a fantastic journey. And we've got a lot to learn, a lot to do.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, you're in the position that I'm sure it must be similar in, you know, there were Yellow Pages books everywhere in the world, right? And yep. So the position that you're in is probably quite fascinating in that you can look at other markets and other countries around the world, see yep. what's working, what's not. In the US, you've got Yelp, and I don't know their full story, but seems to have been a pretty successful result there in terms of producing a digital product. And are there any stories that you've seen around the world that have taught you good lessons, either through big successes or failures and the like, that you've been able to look at? Because it's a little bit of a unique position in that you're still a a local entity with reasonable profits that can fund working out what the next stage of Yellow should look like.
Yeah, so everybody's on a similar journey with some slight subtle changes in their directions. One of the things I think some of the businesses have done well overseas is they've picked a vertical and they've become very strong. They might have picked hospitality or restaurants, and then they've gone and been a very focused service and solution for both the businesses and for the consumers of those businesses. And I think that's something we need to look at here. Is could we pick one or two verticals? Like home services is a very, very strong vertical for us. So anything around whether it be building or carpet cleaning or window cleaning or lawn mowing, we have a huge database. In fact, we have the biggest database in New Zealand of those sort of home services type businesses. So how do we be known for that? How do you create something as a sub brand? And I think that's something we need to look at, and we're just doing a review at the moment. We own a number of different properties, actually. New Zealand Tourism Guide is something that we own, which I think is a really strong brand, and we're looking at that as a vertical, of course, because the tourism industry here in New Zealand has been booming. Of course, there's some global players that have come in into the booking space that have changed that world as well. So we need to work out, well, what could the New Zealand Tourism Guide be as a not only an information service but also as a business? But we've got some great ideas around that, and I think that's one that we really want to focus on and see whether we could do something with that. And you're right, there's other businesses. We've actually done a very good job in New Zealand at holding up the print business better than overseas, where the decline in the print business here is about half is what it is in most of the countries overseas. But they're also a little bit further ahead, I think, in their digital service thinking. We're actually partnering now with Census, our sort of sister company in Australia.
Australia, yeah.
And we are... in fact, I'm over there next week meeting with the CEO, and we're sitting down with our digital teams and we're seeing what we can develop together. So I very much believe in partnership. I think in the past, not just our business but other businesses have tried to build too many things themselves, and you build the infrastructure and then you've got a lot of cost and complexity with that. What we really want to do is partner with other businesses and bring that together. I think that's much faster, it's more efficient, it's more cost effective, all of those things. So yeah, it's an important part of my role is to reach out to those businesses and see what we can do together.
That's good. So if you look back and what you've learned about the last decade or two of Yellow locally and feedback you've had from within the business, are there any sort of particularly sort of big lessons that stand out where maybe the business made a wrong turn or missed a great opportunity?
Yeah, I think there's lots of missteps, but that's not unique to Yellow in trying to build a new business out of a traditional media business. I think it comes back to being really clear around the problem you're trying to solve and trying to do one thing incredibly well rather than 10 things. And it's really easy in the digital world to get it wrong because there's so many opportunities and so many things you could do. We're actually, one of the things we've been doing in the last few months is, one, simplifying all our language, but simplifying all of the things we're doing and saying no to lots of things and going, this is what the business is going to be. We're going to build a world-class digital marketing services product. We're going to partner rather than build. We've done a little bit too much building internally. We're going to recruit the right people. I'm very positive and encouraging around people learning and growing and being promoted from within. But I think when you're in transformation, there's a time for training and there's a time for recruiting the right talent. And we've had to, over the last 12 months in particular, really be honest about the capability in the business. And we've got some awesome capability, but you've also got to acknowledge where you don't have it and then go and bring that in, whether that from overseas or from local talent, and be clear about that. So we've been much more aggressive around our recruitment of talent. And then I think it comes right back to what we said before, talking about purpose and making sure people are really clear about what we're trying to do. I think there's been a little bit of a muddle, not only, and of course that then happens outside the business. So we had to put the pride back into yellow. So now recruiting people in yellow is so much easier today than it was 18 months ago, because we've put the pride, first of all, back into the business. Because if we're not proud about working there, then how can our customers be proud to be working with us? How can the community be proud of talking about us? And that's how we've got to change that barbecue conversation. We've just relaunched the brand, and we've got a fantastic new look, refreshed, digital-looking brand, which is now a new corporate brand. Winning awards, like being acknowledged by Google as being the best in Australasia. All of these things help tell a new story around what we're capable of, and actually having customers being proud and tell their story of how we've helped their business grow. We've got some fantastic case studies now of how we've helped small businesses all over New Zealand grow.
So just zooming in on that thing that, you know, I guess you could say there was certainly embarrassment about the brand. I've talked to people who've been recruited into to Yellow and over the years, and there would be questions of, well, why would you go and work for this company? It's a dying brand, and so on. Now, of course, we know that within any business that's being disrupted, there can be a focus on trying to prop up the old business, or can be a focus on trying to do new things, and a lot of opportunities that come out of that. But somewhere along the way, you must have had to, and maybe more than once, look and say, well, should we be rebranding entirely? Should we sort of throw out the old name and start with something new? Is that something that you went through, and how did you decide on what to do? Because essentially, I think it's fair to say, if you you might not quite be there already, but it sounds like you're a long way around a long way down that track of being that digital marketing company that isn't what people maybe associate the Yellow brand with.
Yep.
So you've got to make that call and say, well, actually, we're a different company now. Yep. Actually, look, you should want to work here because we're the biggest and the best at what we do. We're the leader in this space. But those mindsets might not be natural for people on the outside to have because of the sure. old brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So just going back to the first part, the rebranding, we of course debated that long and hard. At the end of the day, we decided that we couldn't do a Spark. We didn't have the time or the money to do that. And when we talk to our customers and consumers, there's still a lot of goodwill around Yellow. It's still a local New Zealand brand. They just don't know what we do anymore, and it lost its relevance. I also reached out when I was back up in the UK to Yell, it's called in the UK.
Yes.
And they went through an experience, and they did try and rebrand and change completely. And they spent a lot of money, and I think it was almost 2 years, and they ended up changing back because they found it so difficult to get a new brand. You really can't underestimate what effort it takes to launch something completely new. Of course, there's some positives to that because you get to start afresh, but it takes an enormous amount of resource and energy and some time to get there. So we felt when we talked to our consumers and our customers, we could refresh the brand, hold on, and this is the balance of some of the best parts of its heritage and what those feelings were, but refresh it into a digital new look brand and look and feel, and so we've done that, and we've put some content around that, we've made some videos, and it's been great. I mean, this is only about 6 weeks ago, and we've had over 120,000 views of our new look brand on YouTube, and we've promoted that, not actually a huge amount, but it's an incredible, again, what you can do through social media and networks and talking and a little bit of just getting out there and telling that story. So yes, we went through that, and we've decided to go down this sort of refresh brand. And then you're right, why would people come and talk and work for Yellow. And I'm really honest with people. I say, look, the only reason I came to work here is imagine if you're part of the team that rebuilds this New Zealand iconic business into a digital business that is sustainable and growing. And people go, that's one of the most amazing turnarounds in New Zealand business. And you could say to them, yeah, I know. I was there. Let me tell you what I did for 2 or 3 years. I was part of that team. I know exactly what. Now, that's exciting. And that's what I'm there for. And I think that's what people now join us for. And they can start to see that changing. Because when I started, you know, it was hard to find some of those proof points. Now we've got this new brand. We've got a new website that tells what we do. Even the people didn't know that we even built websites. Or we had one of the biggest AdWords teams in New Zealand that we've won all of these awards. You know, Google come down and assess, we've built a whole platform to run it all, and they're saying we've got one of the most efficient platforms in the world they've ever seen. You know, it's incredible. We've got a really smart bunchy 20 something year olds running this thing. It's amazing. And we're doing more and more of that. So, like I say, it's getting easier because when people come into the office now, they're surprised. They're like, this isn't what I expected. And the sort of people that are in the office are not what they expected. And then we show them what we're building and what we're doing. It's getting really exciting. And that's the journey you've got to buy into, right? And I think that in today's world, every business is transforming to some degree. So if you can work somewhere where you're passionate about what the purpose is and you like the people you're going to be working with and you like the idea, you know, we talk about imagine helping one little business in New Zealand at a time. We could change this country. We could do something better. We can strengthen communities. We can make New Zealand is built on entrepreneurship and small business. Let's get back to helping all these businesses thrive. And our that becomes pretty exciting for people. And then if you can be part of something like that, I think your journey in careers today, that's no longer, oh, I'm an accountant, I'm in marketing, I'm in sales, this is my job. No, you're going to be asked to put, and you're in project teams, you're going to be working in agile methodologies and worry less about the hierarchy and who you're reporting to, worry much more about who's across the whole organization, who you're going to work with, where are the ideas going to come from, what are you going to learn in this experience, and how are you going to help a business or a project or overcome a problem and do something quite meaningful and challenging. And I think then people will come out of this experience and will be so much more employable because of the journey they've been on. You know, when it's all great and the, you know, I tell that story about we went from 200 million to 1.5 billion in turnover, you couldn't get much wrong, right? And if you did, you could cover it all because everything looks great when you're making money, you're hitting every forecast, everybody's getting a bonus. Being a manager and a leader in that environment is very different to being a manager and a leader in an environment where you're trying to overcome challenge and change and issues. But I can tell you which one I'd rather employ, yeah. 2 or 3 years down the track when people have got those stories to tell.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're in a time where change and transformation, yeah, just the norm, right? You know, things aren't going to sort of settle back to the pace that their business, you know, was at in prior decades.
Totally.
You know, the need to be able to be agile and to be able to adjust and deal with constant change and to be a part of bringing those things about, obviously.
I can remember back in the early days of Johnson & Johnson, we literally would sit down and we would do 3 to 5 year planning. And we would have spreadsheets around what the numbers were going to be in 5 years. Well, that's just gone today, right? I don't think anybody does 3 to 5 year planning. You might have a view of the direction and things that you want to go, but there's no point putting a spreadsheet together thinking, yeah, we're going to have 3% incremental growth and, you know, our share is going to grow to this. I mean, that's just not how the world works today. So you need to be very comfortable with change and trying something that didn't work and, okay, we're going to do it differently. We broadly think we're going, you know, we talk about an 18 months time. This is what we're trying to deliver and change, and we've got to undo a whole lot of infrastructure infrastructure, and we've kind of set ourselves goals by quarter, and the furthest I think we can look ahead is about 18 months. And then it's down to, well, what do we do on a weekly, fortnightly basis to get ourselves towards that?
Yeah.
And I had another interesting experience, actually, where I went to Westlake Boys, where the son goes to, and I had somebody come over from the States talking about how the world is changing for young people. And, you know, we had this teenage concept come about 100 years ago. Well, there's another – we're looking at this other period of time where – people aren't settling down in their 20s. It's getting into the 30s. They're traveling. They're not, because you know what? A 17-year-old boy today is going to live to 92 or beyond. So, you know, you're going to have 70-odd years of this life. Well, you could have three careers in the life now. You know, it's a very different perspective of young people entering the workforce to when I did, and what that's going to be, and where your journey is going to take you. So, yeah, look, I hope that we're giving people an opportunity to, as we talked about earlier, just grow and learn and pick the people and pick the opportunity and the challenge. And you're going to learn more through a challenge than you are joining something that's all rosy and somebody says, here's your job, just do this. It's been done like that for 5 years, and we'll give you a bonus and a review at the end of the year, and, you know, you can change about 5% of the role. Well, right now we're in a place in our business, but I think in lots of places, where you can change all of your role. Show us how it could be done differently and get involved in different projects and work with lots of different people. That's what we want people to do.
That's great. Now, just one thing I wanted to drill into a little bit is that idea of focus. And, you know, I know from interactions with Yellow over the last few years, and being connected in with, you know, some of the projects that were being done internally, whether they were sort of, well, I guess there are lots of projects that were being done to work out, is this going to be the next piece of Yellow? And there were a whole lot of those.
Yeah.
And now it seems you've got a really clear focus. I don't know how many of those other projects there are on the periphery. But talk to us about that, because, you know, we look at the Googles and Microsofts and Facebooks and so on of this world, and they seem to be doing so many different things at once. And some of those companies will do dozens or hundreds of things, and then out of those they'll pick one thing that then they will, you know, and they'll dump a whole lot. So what does that look like for you, and you know, how focused are you now?
Yeah, I think the first thing is context, right? The reality is that, like I said, we're a medium-sized business that if we don't change quickly, you know, we won't be here in 5 years' time. So the context is very different to when you're throwing off hundreds of billions of dollars, and it affords you that opportunity to try lots of things. I'm sure that they are very focused on how they do that, and they have some very strong outcomes and measures to how they then decide what to follow and what to drop. But it does create a very different context to the context we're in. I like the context we're in because it gives you urgency. It gives the shareholders urgency. It gives our board urgency. It gives the executive team urgency. The urgency is in the business. And it's one of the things that, as I joined, that was good. It was like, okay, we're profitable, so we can invest. But when you're making, say, $300 million, it's like, yeah, you can talk about wanting to become digital, but you're still making $300 million or whatever the enormous amount of money is. So that's a different sort of focus. And now we're in a place where we have got, and we've done this, we around that idea of building a digital marketing services, and what we'd like to expand it to is a business services sort of platform. So what else would small businesses need, whether that be money, you know, peer-to-peer lending, could we take that into small businesses? Could it be phones? Could it be insurance? Could it be accounting services with Xero? There's all sorts of ways we could develop this. But what we've said is actually stop all of that. Let's get back to the core idea around digital marketing services. We looked at a list. We had, I think a few months ago, 51 potential partners. And I asked the team to just choose six. Let's be fair to everybody else on the list. If we've contacted, let's tell them that we're pausing and we, you know, we'll come back to them and all the rest of it. But we have to come down and choose half a dozen and really validate whether they are going to be right and whether we can, you know, through a lean canvas process, bring that in, and is there a marketplace for it? Does it fit to what we're trying to build? Do customers want it, etc.? So we have come back to, we got very excited about how many people wanted to work with us, but we needed to come back to, let's just do a few and do it really, really well, but know where we're trying to scale and what we're doing. So I think it's the context of the business environment you're in as well as to what you can take on.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, and particularly in, say, a market like New Zealand, where we're often looking at what's happening around the world, but is to look at those contextual things and not just to think that we can replicate somebody else's playbook in its entirety and have a look and see, oh, well, that's what's happening over there. That must be exactly what we should be doing.
That's right.
Yeah, and to accept that a lot of these challenges are really, really difficult challenges that we have to that you have to deal with when you've got a business that's being disrupted by all sorts of things that are, you know, that you can't control, and deciding, you know, where to go next and what things to land on.
It's really tough, right? New Zealand's an interesting place because it's very entrepreneurial. You can arguably get things done very quickly. It's very easy to kind of meet and network and all those sorts of things. There's some challenges though, because the capability here, it's small, so it's not like these technologies, these global technologies, whether it be marketing automation or CRM systems, all this, they're all there and available. And then what you find is there's nobody to support them, to help you put them in. So that can be a challenge. Scale is a challenge. So you come into, it's also an opportunity, because sometimes it's meant that the overseas players like Amazon have left it quite a long time to come, but they're coming. And these guys are incredible. So the benchmark that we then have to hold ourselves to are these global benchmarks. And that's changed even since I've been here. You know, the booking.coms and the Trivagos and the Ubers. And so we get to benefit from these incredibly globally powerful technologies. And then if you're in business in New Zealand, that's now the benchmark that your technology and solution needs to get to. That's tough. And then, but where's the opportunity in that? Where are those global players going to miss because they are global? And where can a small New Zealand business do something really special and then be brave enough to do it so well that you could take it offshore? And that's pretty exciting as well. So look, there's lots of challenge in there, from finding capability in the people to how do you scale this thing to make it a business model that actually works. We've had some experiences of that even in our business, where there's a product overseas which is really smart, and we're going to do something along these lines where you could manage your whole digital profile as a business online through one platform. Imagine if you've got, whether it be a website or a Trade Me site or social media, and you've got information, maybe your phone number or your email address or your physical address, and you've got it on 10 different locations online. There's a really cool piece of technology overseas that we're actually partnering with Census and another business in Italy to build something that would allow businesses to change it once, and it will then change everywhere across their digital footprint online. We think that's a really smart, simple thing to build, and it's a pain point that's real, and we can do that really, you know, inexpensively, and we want to do that on scale. The problem with the solution that was developed in the US is they had a business model where it fitted for the US because their list of digital footprints of, you know, was something like in the 50, 60, 70 type sites. Huge. We looked in New Zealand and said, reality is there might be 6 to 8, you know, places where a business in New Zealand might have their information appear. So their business model was set up at a cost level which was built for the US market. And we're saying, well, that's just unaffordable for New Zealand. There's no way a business is going to spend, you know, $50 or $60 a month managing that when you're actually talking about 6 sites or 6 places. They'll just do it themselves.
Yes.
So that was an example for us where the technology and the idea existed overseas, but it wasn't done in a way that we could bring it to New Zealand. And Australia's a little bit the same, a little bit bigger. So we've got that on our sort of roadmap to, for next year, to bring a product like that to New Zealand, which I think could be a really nice way in for small businesses and a connection for us to help them again with their digital products and services.
That's great. So maybe just to wrap up, could you share maybe the sort of the three things that are and we might be covering some ground we've covered before,
sure.
But sort of maybe the top three things in your playbook for, you know, for moving Yellow forward to the place where Yellow needs to be, you know, solid, as solid as things can be in this fast moving world, you know, solid and successful for the next phase in its journey as a company.
Yeah, I guess I'll come right back to what we have weaved through all of this conversation is purpose, people, and culture. Because I don't have a crystal ball, and it's going to be really interesting in another year to 18 months exactly what we are and are doing and what's working. But I'm very clear about our purpose now and helping every business thrive and what that means, and that we're building New Zealand's largest digital marketing agency for SMEs. I think that resonates for people, and we kind of can grapple that internally as well and say, okay, I know what that is and what to do. And then a real journey of people. I've learned a lot, you know, again, good times and tough times, that it always comes down to people and empowering them and finding the right smart people, but also that they can operate within a culture that is right and it's constructive. And we have some great debates and discussions, but it's positive, and you're giving people the opportunity to do something really unique and really powerful. And I find probably true for everybody, but young people particularly today, I think they want to believe in something, right? And a purpose, and to make a difference. They want to be able to contribute to something. It's not just about what my title is and do I get another $3,000 in 6 months or do I get promoted. Okay. It's actually, I actually want to be part of something I believe in and feel like I'm making a difference and telling those stories, so that when that, and we've got them, you know, some people have come back with small businesses and said, my goodness, not only have you saved my business and my three employees, I've gone and employed two more people. And we've got that story, and we needed to make a case study of it and tell people those stories. And then people, both ourselves internally and other people, go, oh, that's cool. Now we're doing something that's cool. And then the business itself, we've got some great ones as a skincare business that are helping people with really personal issues, and then they're affecting, you know, a bit of the community and helping consumers. So I think if we always come back to having a really clear purpose, employing great people and getting them to connect well, and hopefully, and I think we are now creating an incredible culture, and we're seeing that through our most recent surveys of, you know, we have an employee MPS score that we do every 6 months, and 6 months ago we were minus 14. You know, it wasn't all working great. This doesn't all, you know, you go forwards and backwards, and it wasn't all brilliant. Well, we just got our latest results, and we're plus 27. We've had a, you know, something like a 41 point swing in 6 months. So I'm really proud of that.
So the net promoter score to you, is that's something you've taken interest in for a long time?
Yeah, we've used it for a long time in my business career, mainly for customers, you know, that kind of, you know, how likely you recommend this business to your friends and colleagues or whoever. But we've turned it into an employee MPS score. We ask other things as well around that survey. And we've seen an enormous change in Yellow over the last couple of years.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed it. Anything else that you want to add before we finish up?
No, it's been great. I've never been on this side of a podcast. I have loved them for probably the last year or so. They've been absolutely brilliant, and I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks very much for listening in to this episode of the New Zealand Business Podcast. I trust you enjoyed hearing from Darren Linton about his journey in business and leadership, both here in New Zealand and around the world, and hearing some of the situations that have helped him learn along the way, and of course, some in there about what has him relishing the chance to lead
yellow into its digital future. And of course, I'd like to thank our two sponsors, Guerrilla Technology, helping small and medium New Zealand organisations succeed through smart use of tech, and Process Street, the platform we use at Guerrilla to help deliver outstanding service to all of our customers. It allowed us to capture and roll out standard operating procedures company-wide, along with all the supporting material that makes that possible to actually use those processes by having great supporting videos and training instructions. Now, this is a tool that's helped us improve our consistency and has made the entire business less reliant on me, as the things that many of the things that were in my head have been converted into digital processes, so now anybody can do them, which really frees me up. Now, if you'd like to find out how Process Street can help your business, head across to nzbusinesspodcast.com/processstreet. As part of that, you'll get a 10% discount for life on the product. And now, if you'd like to get in touch with me, whether it's to speak at a conference, event, maybe to your board or anything else, then feel free to drop an email through to team@guerrillatechnology.com, and I'll be back in touch with you promptly. All right, thanks everyone. Catch you on the next episode.
The New Zealand Business Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, your strategic and proactive IT partner.